This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 12th of May, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org from the Sheffield Live studio above the showroom workstation in the centre of Sheffield. This programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website.
Talking about podcasts, did you miss last week's programme? It featured the chief executive and founder of The Flow, an innovative Sheffield tech firm, which has already grown to 80 staff in just 5 years and is on course to double. Aldo Monteforti joined us on the programme last week and talked about skills in the city region. He said Sheffield is abundant in them. So if you miss that, then don't panic. Catch the podcast on the Sheffield Live website. What's coming up today, though? Well, we have illustrator and designer Lisa Maltby on the programme today. Now, she joined me for a fascinating interview on Tuesday of this week, talking about the type of work that she does as an illustrator, how she does it, who she does it for, how she helps them, and the issue of how she prices her work as well. Now, if you're a creative, this is an interview that you're going to find really, really useful to listen to. So stay tuned for that. After Lisa, we'll be hearing from Mike Thompson of the social enterprise Right Tracks. Right Tracks have been on the show two or three times before. We're going to catch up with them, see how they're doing. So that's coming up soon. But before that, what's been going on in business and in social enterprise this week? Well, first of all, Sheffield-based Dialogue Group has been acquired by a Swedish firm for £32 million. Dialogue Group Limited, based here in Yorkshire, is a mobile messaging and security services firm. They have an office in Sheffield and also offices in London, Singapore and Sydney. And they've been acquired by CLX Communications. The deal also adds additional mobile operators to CLX's super network. And Dialogue's co-founder and chief executive, Hugh Spear, said in a statement that he's delighted they've finalised this deal, building on CLX's impressive growth, and that it will provide Dialogue's customers access to the largest Tier 1 network in the industry and improve quality, reliability and security of their service. And the president of CLX Communications commented that Dialogue is one of the leading global mobile messaging and secure communications companies. What else is going on? Well, the FSB, the Federation for Small Businesses, is urging all political parties to back the UK's self-employed. There are 4.8 million self-employed people in the UK now, and the FSB is warning political parties against standing in the way of the UK's millions of self-employed with post-election tax hikes. It's published a small business election manifesto called Small Business Big Ambition, and the FSB calls on parties wanting to form the next government and candidates standing for Parliament to make a positive commitment about the self-employed. They said that there should also be greater recognition in the welfare system for equal maternity pay and fair treatment under universal credit, according to the FSB. And the FSB's regional statement chairman, Gordon Millwood, commented that small businesses and the self-employed will be vital to a successful post-Brexit economy. He said that politicians seeking their votes should be on their side and against hitting them with extra costs. The manifesto sets out more than 30 steps the next government should take, and you can read it at the FSB's website. Sheffield College has been shortlisted for the Training Provider of the Year category of the North Midlands and South Yorkshire Apprenticeship Awards 2017. Now, these are run by Johnson Press, and they celebrate and recognise organisations that are involved in apprenticeships and how they shape the city's future. The Business Development Director of Sheffield College is Andrew Hartley, and he commented that the college has seen increased demand for apprenticeships and that they're proud of their high achievement rates. And he said they're delighted that this success has been recognised. College has seen 24% growth in its direct delivery of apprenticeships during the last 2 years, and its offer spans a broad range of industry sectors. A new website called Good Finance has been launched this week. The website address is goodfinance.org.uk, and they say their mission is to help social enterprises and charities to navigate the complex world of social investment. So if you're looking for social investment, if you're interested in social investment, then take a look. It explains what's available, showcases what social investment is. It was designed by social enterprises and charities themselves in collaboration with Big Society Capital and with other key sector partners. So take a look. And if you're looking for an injection of cash, it's worth exploring that website too. A few events coming up, including more events from the Business and IP Centre in Sheffield. Their events are free. And loads going on the 18th of May, for example, they have a workshop on the introduction to copyright. So it will explain the basics of copyright, eligible works, duration of protection, key resources to access, and how to protect and manage your copyright. That's next week, the 18th of May, 2 till 4 p.m. They also have a trademark clinic coming on the 9th of June, 45-minute clinics. You have to book for that. Appointment only, but available from 9:45 to 12:15 on the 9th of June, and much, much more. So if you want more details, it's worth taking a look at the eventbrite.co.uk, and on there search for Business and IP Centre Sheffield, and you'll find all of the forthcoming free events that Business and IP Centre Sheffield is running. Well worth taking a look at those. Also coming up, of course, next week, it's the Buy Yorkshire event, and that's a two-day event. Yorkshire's biggest business conference, it's billed at. That's next week, the 16th and 17th of May at the Royal Armouries in Leeds. Free to attend, loads and loads of speakers, workshops, seminars and exhibitors too. And go to buyyorkshire.com to find more details about that. This week, it's been Mental Health Awareness Week, and it's worth taking a look at the website mentalhealth.org.uk. Loads of resources on there and blogs about getting people thriving with good mental health in the workplace. So a workplace mental health expert, Chris O'Sullivan, has posted a blog about what needs to happen, what would be good to happen to make workplaces mentally healthier. Well worth taking a look at that. Quick reminder that you can get in touch with us if you want to comment on what we've been talking about, if you want to put yourself forward to be on this programme, if you want to put someone else forward or suggest a topic that you think we should be commenting on or covering, then get in touch. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07 904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our first interview of today's show. And this week I caught up with Lisa Maltby. She's a really talented illustrator and designer. And it's well worth taking a look at her website to see the type and the diversity of work that she can do. She's worked for organisations such as Chatsworth, plenty of businesses, charities and many, many more. She's also worked with Printed by Us, and listeners will recall we had Printed by Us, social enterprise set up in collaboration with Just Works and the Cathedral Archer Project. They were on the show 2 weeks ago because there's a new exhibition of Printed by Us prints that's currently running at Union Street. Anyway, Lisa has contributed artwork to that exhibition as well. But to make a living, she works as an illustrator for a huge range of clients in the region and beyond. And I caught up with her on Tuesday in some studios where she's based in Healy to ask her about what she does, who she does it for, how she does it, and the perennial question of how she prices her work as a creative. She wrote a blog about that a couple of months ago, which set off a huge amount of online debate. So it was absolutely fascinating. If you're running a creative business, well worth listening to this. We'll hear from Lisa now. So Lisa, hello. Thanks very much for joining me today. First of all, can you tell me and tell listeners what it is that you do?
I'm a freelance illustrator and graphic designer.
Great. And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it for about 2 years freelance. Previously, I worked at a design agency for 9 years doing graphic design.
Right. So you went into business on your own account, if you like, a couple of years ago as a freelancer. And I've met you today in some studios in Healy.
Yeah.
Lovely studio that you're in.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful refurbished old school, of course, some studios as well.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Fantastic. So, before you were working for yourself, you mentioned that you were working in an agency, so you did that for a number of years. Was it frightening? Was it scary to go into business on your own? What made you do it?
Yeah, it was very scary. A number of reasons, really, why I left. The main thing really was having children, and my eldest was going to start school, so I was sort of debating around how I could work out doing all the different childcare, dropping my youngest off at nursery and my eldest off at school. It became really difficult to kind of work out flexible hours, so that was sort of half of why. And the other reason was that my work, I was always working on personal projects with my own work, and my personal creative work was going in a different direction to that of the business that I was in. So I really wanted to explore that a bit more and push my own work a bit more and see where that took me. So it was kind of a number of different reasons really why.
And those reasons, I'm sure, resonate with many of us who've left perhaps what seem to be safe jobs working for other people to start our own businesses for all sorts of reasons, to do with personal circumstances, to do with to do with convenience around our family needs, and to do with our personal motivations and what makes us tick and stimulate us as well. So great. So you've been working for yourself for a couple of years. What kind of work do you do, and who do you work for?
I do a lot of varied work. I started off doing mainly food illustration for magazines such as Weight Watchers magazine, Delicious magazine. And then my work kind of progressed to lots of different areas. So I do a lot of work for Chatsworth House, and I do a lot of the designs for their house trails for children, guided tours, leaflets and things for that. And then I do a lot of, been getting back into doing a lot of more branding stuff, a lot more graphic design stuff, and then a lot of lettering and typography. So my work kind of goes down a lot of different routes, which is why I find it hard to sort of pinhole exactly what I do. So yeah, working lots of different areas of illustration and design.
But that variety within the illustration and the design work that you do, as well as a variety of clients, must be stimulating in itself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love the variety of it. It's brilliant. Every week's very different.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm based here. Sometimes I'm out and about meeting people. Sometimes I'm out doing a mural or something. So it's really nice to have that little mix within your work. So
good stuff. And you've done some work with Printed by Us, who were on the show a couple of weeks ago too.
Yes.
That's one of several projects that you've been involved with that have been either charitable or social enterprise in nature itself.
Yeah.
But I noticed the Herd of Elephant project as well. You're one of the people who worked on that.
Yes, they're really great projects to get involved in. Just to kind of get involved with the community. It's really sort of mutually beneficial as well, because you can make a lot of connections, and you create a real buzz around what each other is about and what you're doing, as well as supporting obviously really important charities. So it's been really good to get involved with things on the side that are really beneficial to the charities and to the community as well.
Yes, quite great. And your particular elephant in the Herd of Elephants was auctioned and raised several thousand pounds, I believe.
Yeah, 7,600 I think it went for in the end,
Excellent. That was such a lovely project for Sheffield as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant, It was really fun seeing them all around Sheffield.
Good. And so listeners can admire some of your work, of course, on your website. There are plenty of examples there. And Printed by Us are having an exhibition at the moment at Union Street and so on. And you mentioned work for people like Chatsworth. You've done book covers as well. You've done illustration, a whole range of work. Now, one question that people who are in your industry might ask themselves is, how do you price your work? And how do you come up with a cost for a job? Someone's asking you to come up with a price to do some, potentially do some work for them. How do you come up with that? Is it something that is very difficult but gets easier with experience, or is it always hard to come up with a cost?
It's been one of the biggest challenges of my work. And it's one of those things where once you've set a price, you can't go back on that. You know, it's not something that you can sort of, you know, make a lot of mistakes with, almost, with people. So it is like a steep learning curve, especially when I first initially went freelance. I'm always sort of learning different things, but I think it's definitely getting a lot easier. I think that the problem with creativity is that you can't always just put that down to a set amount of hours. So as with a lot of things, people want you to charge by the hour. But what happens is that when you do charge by the hour, people say, well, can you do that in an hour then, please? Because they want it for as little as possible.
Yes.
Or they will always be asking, well, how long is that going to take you? And sometimes when you're doing creative work, you don't necessarily... There's something for a similar project, such as a branding project. It could take one brand, several months to develop. You could be using several different techniques. You could be involving photographers. You could be doing all sorts of different stuff. And another brand could take you a month or so, because it's mainly graphic, or you're not. There's so many different elements to it. So to charge one brand more than another one is almost a little bit unfair, because essentially what they're getting is the same outcome,
yes,
but you've done it differently. So I always try to quote my work based on the outcome,
yes,
of what it is that someone's getting and the value that they're getting for that project. Because if Coca-Cola comes to you and they want a rebrand, I'm going to charge them a hell of a lot more than if you came to me and wanted a logo for your company.
Yes.
Even though essentially they're getting the same things, it's based on the usage and on the value that they're getting out of that, because it's going to such a vast audience and they're getting so much advertising out of it. So it gets really, really difficult when it comes to illustration, because when people commission sort of a designed flyer or something that's graphic design based, they're only using it for a flyer. That's all they're using it for.
Indeed, yeah.
But when they come to you for an illustration, they think that they own that. They can put it on T-shirts, they can put it on details, they can sell it in a shop, they can put it on advertising worldwide, they can, you know, sell it, you know, do whatever they want with it. Which is why there's always such an issue with copyright, with artists. You know, you hear these stories of, high street brands ripping off artists' work,
yes, indeed,
and there's all
yeah.
these legalities. And it gets really difficult with that, because as an artist, you need to have those sort of boundaries on what people can use your work for, because otherwise it could, you know, you could be seeing it everywhere. But at the same time, that's really beneficial for people that you can work with, smaller companies, and because it's based on usage, you're not charging them as much as something that's going on a big advertising campaign. So it kind of works, it swings and roundabouts, and it works both ways, but I think it's just about being really clear with people how you're charging your work and just making expectations really clear and what they're getting out of it, and just having that conversation, and, you know, that conversation, because at the end of the day, everybody's human and everybody wants to have, you know, a good working relationship. So it's about that, discussing that and working with people's budgets and trying to, not that I work for very little, but if people have budgets, it's really important to be really like open about it, I think, and work out ways that you can help people with what they're doing, and being really clear about that.
That's really interesting, because you're talking about outcomes and people and charging based on outcome. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Firstly, based on, you know, they get a result, and secondly, the usage of that as well. So a couple of really clear distinctions there. And it does remind me of a story which may well be made up, but it probably illustrates it quite well, about Picasso being sitting at a restaurant and someone coming up to him and saying, can you do me a sketch? And he drew a sketch on a napkin, and it took him 30 seconds, gave it to the person, and said, that'll be 10,000 francs, or can't remember where he was sitting at the time in the story. And the person said, well, it took you 30 seconds. And Picasso says, no, it took me a lifetime.
Yeah.
So it's a nice sort of story that sort of illustrates the point, whether it's true
Definitely.
Or not.
Because as well, as you get more experience, you get a lot quicker at what you do. So essentially, you're then earning less for being better. So it doesn't make sense.
No, indeed. So it's more about saying, well, the result that you want is a flyer or is an outcome. This is what I charge for that. And the result is, you know, this is how you want to use it as well. So that, I suppose, then means that sometimes a job will take longer than you've mentally expected it to take, but you're not charging by the hour. Sometimes it will take a lot less than you perhaps expected it to take.
Yeah.
But from the client's point of view, that doesn't really matter. They get what they want.
Exactly, yeah.
And as long as you're setting your fees per job at the right level to cover your overheads and the money that you need to make to be a sustainable business as a freelancer, then it works for you as well. Have you had experiences, though, where setting prices based on this sort of outcome has worked badly for you, where it's burnt you because clients have been unreasonable, or because you've perhaps misinterpreted what they wanted? Have you had any learning experiences?
Definitely. There's, and I think that's the thing, especially early on. Sometimes you're not quite sure how to, because obviously you do need to account for the time as well, as a rough estimate as to how many hours you're putting in, because obviously if you're working all hours on something, you can't work on anything else, and you know, you need to earn a living. So there's been cases where I've definitely underestimated how much time is involved, and I've pre-quoted something and I've spent hours and hours over. But I think that's always going to happen early on, and in a way it's fine, because you're learning and you're developing your work as well, and that all comes as part of the process, doesn't it? So there's definitely things, each time you make a mistake, you think, okay, I'll do that differently next time. I'll put a certain amount of revisions that are included in the job in with the original quotation, things like that. So I think it's all about those boundaries initially, of sort of saying, well, this is how many amendments you're going to get, this is, you know, how many meetings you're going to get, or whatever. Sometimes you can be, once you work with people, you can be a lot more laid back about it. But I think there is something in those really healthy boundaries initially, especially as a freelancer. I think people just think that you have nothing else to do and that you're there, you know, yes, your only client, and there's sort of like, you know, ring you up at 2 o'clock on a Saturday and you're like, well, I'm not at work now.
Well, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I interviewed somebody called Vicky Fraser a few weeks ago on this program, and she helps people, a lot of people in creative businesses in particular, in terms of securing clients, based on her own background as a copywriter, but she's now gone into helping other people. And she is very clear that clients will treat you how you allow them to treat you. And if you let people phone you up at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon and then respond to an emergency of their own making, not of yours, then that's what they'll do.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really hard, isn't it, for us to say, for people to say no to clients when we're working for ourselves.
Yeah, because you want to make the money, don't you? Because you don't want to, you know, run out of the work. So I think, and especially initially, you're very cautious of saying no to people because you need to earn a living. I definitely resonate with that. I think I've been too helpful. People are like, oh, you can do this and that. I think that's the trouble, is like, I always want to go the extra mile with my work, and I'm always happy to go that extra mile. But if somebody's the sort of person that's like, oh, right, okay, maybe you could do this and this and this. So you still have to, even though you're that, you know, if you want to go the extra mile, you still have to have a cut-off point where you're like, no, this is all you get for that. I'm sorry, this is going to cost you X amount extra.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's the conundrum of the person who works for themselves, often in a creative industry, who really cares about the quality of the work they do and giving the client the best possible outcome as well. And that conundrum, but without being taken advantage of, if you like.
Yeah, exactly.
But you've got better at setting those
boundaries. Definitely got better. And I think as well, because I wrote that blog post about it, that opened up a lot of conversation with other creatives, and it was so brilliant because it was just everyone was like, yeah, I totally have these issues, this is, oh, thank you so much for writing that, it's really helpful. And I don't think people talk about pricing enough. People aren't open about these things, so you feel like you're the only one, and you feel like you're on your own battling with these issues, but actually there's so many people who are going through the same things and actually talking about things. I mean, like I'm in my studio sharing with two other designers, and we talk about the jobs that we've got on and different things, and it's just really helpful to have that discussion, because you're able to encourage each other to stick up for your work and to be able to produce work of real quality and to be respected in your field of work, and that in turn gets more better work, you know, gets you more better work, if that makes sense.
It really does.
Yeah, so it's good to open that discussion, I think.
Absolutely. Well, on that topic of opening that discussion, you wrote a blog post about what you've learned about pricing your work, and that's on your website, and we'll mention the website address in a moment, of course. But as you say, that seemed to inspire lots of discussion, and as well as posting it on your website, you posted it as a discussion within LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then something strange happened, didn't it? Something rather interesting, because you had a response out of the blue from someone who saw it on LinkedIn and took it upon himself to do almost a line-by-line critique of what you were saying. Now, this chap, someone by the name of Bernard Poulin, I think.
Yeah.
He wasn't someone who you'd worked with or knew professionally.
No, never met him or spoken to him before.
And he wasn't, it seemed to me, he wasn't just attacking the ideas within the blog post in terms of how you come up with appropriate pricing for client work. He seemed to be taking it upon himself to make some personal and snide and petty attacks on yourself. Mm. Now, that must have been pretty shocking to see that. How did it make you feel?
Horrible. Yeah. I was really shocked when I first read it. I couldn't, I almost sort of a bit in disbelief that somebody had that amount of time to personally assassinate me. I was like, oh my goodness. So I really sort of questioned myself and thought, have I been really aggressive in my original blog post? Do I come across wrong? You know, you start really doubting yourself a little bit. But I sort of spent a couple of days just thinking, I'll just ignore it for a bit and then I'll respond. And then I just thought, right, I'll just write him a letter in response, but just a real tongue-in-cheek letter that was kind of politely putting him in his place, but with a bit of a sense of humour. I just think that's the best way of dealing with these nutters.
Well, I have to say, it's well worth reading your response, because I thought it was light and deft of touch, full of humour, but also you made your point extremely well, and you, if you like, you assassinated his assassination.
Yeah.
It was excellent, and it's on your website and well worth a read. And then people responded very positively, of course, to your own comments as well.
Yeah, it was great, actually. It created a bit of a buzz about this Bernard character, and just almost kind of caricatured him a bit, and made his original insults just very funny. So it just lightened the whole thing and helped me to just be like, this is actually really funny. And I had so many hits on my website after that, and so much positive response that actually it did me a lot of favours. So I'm actually quite thankful for Bernard.
Well, he got a debate going, and if he wanted to get a debate that going, fine. But he did it in a very personal way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and a lot of people were, commented on his post, and were very, encouraging of my post and sticking up for me. And we're like, just pick up the phone and speak to have a proper discussion. Don't start this argument online about it. Just have that discussion, which is always what I'm up for. But he just responded in another essay to these comments. So he's obviously just had a bee in his bonnet that he just wanted to get angry about something.
Seems so, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
But publishing blog posts in the way that you do is clearly really helpful for other people in the creative industry, other people working for themselves as freelancers or running their own creative businesses, because as you've pointed out, a lot of people don't really talk about the difficulty, say, of pricing jobs, or also about client expectations and when they're reasonable and when they're completely unreasonable, and clients phoning you up and saying, oh, can I use that illustration on your website, and but then not wanting to pay you for it because you've already done the work.
That
seems very bizarre, but clients do sometimes treat people in very bizarre ways.
Yeah.
And I suppose posting so openly in the way that you do must be very effective at demonstrating, first of all, your expertise and your talent, but also drawing clients who would be great to work with towards you, and even if you like, making sure that those clients who just want someone to do some very cheap illustration for them, send them away and send them to there are sites where they can get someone to do a job for $5 if they want to. Which is totally different.
It's been really good and positive. So they always have a positive response. I think I always feel very, I do feel very exposed putting stuff out there, because I think, how is this going to look on me and my work? And I think because you have two audiences, you have other creatives and then you have your clients.
Yes, that's true.
So I'm always trying to sort of balance that, because a lot of the time creatives will find something really helpful. And I'm always really keen to encourage, because it means that it benefits the creative industry as a whole. Because if more people are placing value on their work and having good work ethic, and having good boundaries with their clients and stuff, it really helps the creative industry as a whole. But with that, a lot of the time you can be talking about things that may be negative experiences, but then you don't want it to reflect badly on you as a freelancer.
No.
Because I would hate to think any client would be thinking, oh my gosh, she writes a blog post about me and this and that. So it's this really fine line between, being really open but not too open, that,
Yes.
Because because I never put anybody's names, or I never write details of anything. It's just my general experiences, which I think is really, really helpful. But I think a lot of clients really value that openness. A lot of my clients have said, you know, they found the post about Bernard really funny, and actually it's created a bit of a buzz about my work. So they want to work with me because they like my sense of humour and
yes.
like the way I deal with them. So that's been positive. So yeah.
Superb. That's great news. So what's coming up for you, Lisa? What work do you have on this year, this month, this week? What are you really excited about at the moment?
I've got lots of things in the pipeline. I'm going to London this week for an exciting meeting, although I've signed an NDA, so I can't tell you what it is. what else am I doing? I'm doing some work for Harewood House, I'm doing a guidebook for them.
Lovely.
With lots of illustrations, and so I'm doing like the whole layout for it and everything as well, so that's a really lovely one to work on. I'm doing some work for Nottingham Council. Loads of really different things, in the pipeline. So, and I'm always working on personal projects as well, alongside, because I think that's really important. So I've always got a sort of a bit of a direction in my head where I want to take my work. So I like to do personal projects surrounding those areas so that I can push that sort of side of my work.
Great.
Yeah.
Exciting. And people can find out more about you, about the work that you do.
Yeah.
Read your blog posts as well, all on your website. So do you want to give out the address?
Yeah, it's lisamaltby.com.
Excellent.
And then all my blog posts are in the articles section where the Bernard piece is.
Great, super. And you're also on social media as well, LinkedIn, of course, we've talked about. You publish to there too.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram.
Great.
And Facebook. I'm everywhere.
And are you easy to find on Twitter and Instagram?
Yeah, I'm just Lisa Maltby Creative, and Lisa_Maltby on Twitter.
Super. Okay, so brilliant. People can find you there. Well, Lisa, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today. That's been hugely illuminating, and hopefully most illustrative too for me and the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Sheffield Live.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly business and social enterprise programme. If you want to get in touch, if you want to be on the show, if you want to put someone else forward to be on the programme, or if you want to comment on something that you think we should be talking about on Sheffield Live, then you can get in touch. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. We're always keen to hear from you, whether you're interested in starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're already doing so, or if you want to comment on what would be good in terms of policy to support business and social enterprise as we approach the election. What do you want to see happen? What would support you? Get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. So we've just been hearing in an interview with Lisa Maltby. She's an illustrator and a designer, and I caught up with her on Tuesday of this week to talk about the process that she's been through in terms of setting up her self-employment, which she's been doing for nearly 2 years. Before that, she was working in an agency. So why did she make that jump to work for herself? How did she do it? What were the challenges that she faced? What have been the learning points? How does she price her work? And she's written a brilliant blog about that. It's worth checking out on her website, Lisa Maltby. And if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that interview with her, then it's going to be gold for you, particularly if you're working in the creative industries. So don't panic, because you can catch up with the show on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. You can find that at sheffieldlive.org. Look up radio shows, look up Business Live, and today's Business Live will be up at about 11 o'clock today. Now, regular listeners will be familiar with a social enterprise called Right Tracks, and we've had Right Tracks on the programme 2 or 3 times. Michael, Adam, Joe have been in the studio talking with me, and I'm actually delighted to welcome Right Tracks back to the studio today. To find out more about what's been going on with Right Tracks since last time. So, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Very well.
Yeah, not too bad, thank you very much.
I said better after my breakfast. So.
Yeah. Yes, and there's a wealth of breakfasting opportunities around the Sheffield Live studio.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Well, wellies.
I skipped it at the train station because I was extortionate, so thought I'd save some pennies and I could buy this lad a coffee as well, so with my change.
Opted for the independence instead of the...
Exactly.
Opted for a nice independent. Yeah, good stuff. Well, we've heard last week about independent businesses thriving, opening more than closing in 2016, plenty of independents round here. So, what's been going on with Right Tracks? You were last on the show, I think it was late 2016.
Yeah, last October.
Yeah, it was
on
October,
the show,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Celebrating anniversary,
yes.
Of course.
Yes,
that's it.
So we'll now be 1.5, I guess. We turned one in October. We're coming up to sort of halfway point between our first and second birthday now.
Yep.
Growing up.
1.5, yeah.
Indeed.
We've been quite busy, really. We've taken on a few more bits and pieces, like we do a regular live stream every week to like showcase new DJs in Sheffield.
So that started off as an actual night at a venue in Sheffield, and then it's sort of we've moved it to another location that we'll, I suppose we'll come to in a bit. And since then just carrying on events on the monthly. We've got a residency at the Harley as well on West Street.
Yeah, we do a weekly a monthly Wednesday night at the Harley now.
Right. Fantastic.
Which is great because we had a couple of nights there last year. And it's been wanted to do something more regularly there because it's
getting that residency. That's a great step then, isn't it? That's good news.
Definitely.
Yep. Excellent.
Carrying on more radio stuff as well. Been on UK Mondo bi-weekly. So we've got a slot on there at 10 till 12 every couple of weeks.
Right, so people can access that through through all the usual apps.
I'd assume so, yeah.
Yeah, ukmondo.com is our website, but we like repost all the playlists on our SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm. Superb.
And carrying on with Reform Radio in Manchester as well.
That
once a month.
Yeah, of course. So you're used to being this side of the radio desk, as we talked about before. So,
Yeah, we've said that before. I'm enjoying this side.
Yeah.
I like the being interviewed instead. Yeah, it's good.
Excellent. So plenty
what
going
else have
on.
We been doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we're
I'm sure we've got loads more to talk about.
Yeah, then we've been planning for the Bowl Hills Festival, which we plugged last year. Obviously, mm-hmm. We did our first one. We're back with that again this August. And we've got a fundraiser for that tonight as well.
Well, I want to pick up on that in a moment or two, because that's looking like a great event coming up tonight. You've been getting some press coverage as well, described as one of Sheffield's most exciting social enterprises. And lovely.
Go on. There we go. So, I'd agree with that.
You'd agree with that, indeed. So, excellent. So, I'm talking with Right Tracks. We've invited Michael and Adam of Right Tracks back into the studio to hear about what's been going on since last time they were here in October last year. Music social enterprise Right Tracks, and run an event on Bowl Hills Community Festival that has been described as showing why parks are so important to Sheffield because of the diversity of events that you can put on and working with independent businesses, with artists and so on. You worked
Absolutely.
With Crooks Forum, I think, and the City Council as well to make that event happen. So you had a lot of partners, didn't you?
Yeah, so we've received continued support of certain members of the council. Craig Gamble and Anne Murphy have been really supportive of the whole idea of the festival.
Yes.
And I would say that they seem open to ideas. And the council do want people to use the green spaces in Sheffield, so it would be worth exploring those avenues if people have event ideas or speak to us.
Mm-hmm.
If people have got ideas for promoting events in different spaces around the city. Because I think it's a thing that people often thought wouldn't happen, or you wouldn't be able to do it, put an event on in a park, but it all seemed pretty straightforward. forward in the end, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a case of if you want to make it happen, then make it happen, I suppose.
Yeah. That's it.
So, yeah. I mean, you have to go through certain processes, but clearly the council want things to happen.
I mean,
I know lots of people will know about things like Peace in the Park as a big event.
Yeah.
Attracts something in the region of 9,000-10,000 people, and the organisation that goes into something like that is huge. I know how hard the voluntary committee work to make it happen and to make it a brilliant fun event, but make it a safe event as well. Things like the toilet, hiring the portaloos and so on. And all the safeguarding issues.
There's so many things that underneath the surface that, the easiest things for us were probably booking the acts.
Yes.
We've got friends who can help us out with the sound system and stage. Yeah. You know, things like that are just obvious to us, but then you scratch beneath the surface and you see all the, hiring toilets, making sure there's people who can do first aid, all these little things that you eventually find out, and it's a massive, massive task. So, once we get to this stage where we're doing as big event as Peace in the Park, we'll tell you how we're feeling.
But you're already doing great events and popular events, and last time you were here, you had plenty going on, and tonight you've got... You've got fundraiser for Right Tracks on the Bowl Hills, and fundraiser tonight in the centre of town. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, so tonight's at Dina, which is on Cambridge Street, just by John Lewis. So
the old Golden Harvest.
Yeah, it's just up from our old
from your old haunt.
But Dina's a great venue. Two floors, it's quite like an 80s interior, but like it's a different place for us. Because we've never done anything in there, but they do loads of different stuff in the week.
They do
from
indeed.
Like drama workshops, and they had an Ableton workshop on last night. They do productions in there, loads of different cool creative stuff.
It's a good place to get involved in,
Yeah, and they're doing a lot of stuff we'd probably like to be doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So they seem to have put on a massive range of events since they launched last year as a venue. It's added something to the city centre and to the music and the art scene, I'd have thought.
Definitely.
So tonight your event starts at 10 o'clock, runs through till 5.
Yes.
So who's on?
So it's an all-night creative culture showcase. We've booked, like we did last year, we've booked some of our favourite acts from electronic music. Mm-hmm. The main two being Mark Archer, who is one half of Rave Outfit Alternate, and CFAX Acid Crew. So he's like a live...
He's the only part of the crew.
Yeah, he is. He's the sole member of the crew.
Yeah.
He is the crew.
He's the crew, yeah.
And he is packing enough sound to be a crew.
All right, then.
I'd see that's where he gets his name from, definitely.
Yeah. So he's on, Mark Archer.
Yeah, so they're the two out-of-town guests, and then we've got support from a whole range of people from across the north, really. Some DJs come from Huddersfield, Leeds, Manchester. And then we've got some poetry, some live visuals, some live art, all spread across Dina. So hopefully be a vibrant event, really.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it will be. And tickets on the door?
Yes, tickets available on the door for £15, but there are still... we sold out of £10 tickets on Party for the People, but Skiddle and Resident Advisor still have plenty.
Okay, great. So you can still get advance tickets.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And you mentioned Party for the People there. Great local institution now.
They've done great.
Yeah, they have, haven't they? Mm. Founder of Party for the People, Steve Rimmer, behind CADS as well, also set up a new social enterprise ticketing website recently.
Yep.
Tickets for Good.
Yes.
That's looking interesting.
I need to. I've seen that dotted about, but I didn't know entirely what the difference was going to be, or
well,
what,
We're going to get Steve on the show soon to tell us exactly what it is, so we can find out more.
Tickets for Good sounds like a good thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. If it does what it says on the tin. Yeah. Steve was on the programme recently, though, talking about Aberdale Picture House, because CADs have taken a long lease on that.
Yeah, beautiful building. Mm-hmm.
Stunning building, isn't it? It's amazing.
I was out there at Caribou last week.
Yeah.
The first time I actually went into the cinema.
Yeah. Oh, it's
great.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
How do you get a car in the cinema?
Well, the car's right. Well, the car's in the car park.
Great place. So loads happening there, thanks to CADs,
I'd be really interested to see what they do there.
So I'm just looking at the Right Track site, and can see that you've added lots to the shop since you were last on, in terms of prints and art. So some pretty interesting stuff from a range of artists there.
So we're trying to sort of push some bits and push people's artwork that maybe wouldn't get reproduced, and put it into like an affordable format, whereby if we do sell enough, we can support the artists, we can pay them some money, but it also gives people a relatively affordable piece of art that's not like an expensive original canvas. Mm-hmm.
And we take them down to all our nights, so we're selling them for reasonable £3 or five if a couple. Yeah. It's like, just have one less beer and take some, you know, amazing artwork home with you instead. Mm. You know, support the artist.
So that works really, really well. Mm. Brilliant. Good. So I wonder if you've got any tips, any advice for people wanting to set up, whether it's a social enterprise or an ordinary business, in the sort of events and music industries, because you're now a year and a half in to actually trading and running. You've talked about collaborating and getting great support with people.
Massive, definitely.
I was talking about the importance of that just yesterday, because obviously we've got this event on tonight. I was speaking to my friend Dan, and we were saying, if we've got any problems with any gear, we've got any number of people we can turn to borrow equipment. And like just this week, we've needed to borrow a mixer of somebody, or we need to borrow another mixing desk or something, and we can ring people up. We know it's there, and that's
paramount, isn't it? Having a a broad network of people that you can call on or rely on.
But that's Sheffield as well, really. Yeah. There's a supportive scene here.
There's a great scene here. So that collaboration, and you access support from some of the social enterprise support agencies, if you like. School for Social Entrepreneurs, I think, as
absolutely.
I recall.
So I'm on the class four this year, the startup group. But they also do a range of things. There's a new program of support from SSE that's come out this year. So they do start up and they do scale up, but there is, I think, Trade Up, I think it's called.
Yeah.
But there's a new one, and they're very, very much worth getting in touch with. They're really supportive organisation.
Yeah. So get in touch with them. It would be good advice too.
SSE are great, even just to ring up and ask for support if you've got any questions around general things to do with business.
Yeah.
They can point you in the right direction for lots of things.
Brilliant.
And the Prince's Trust as well.
Massive for getting
us started.
Yeah.
They have a terrific enterprise course.
Yes.
Which is only a week long, but it's so packed full of useful information and different activities to get the ball rolling in terms of setting up business.
Definitely. So get you thinking about things that you'll need to consider.
Fantastic.
Yeah, definitely recommend that.
Okay, good. Well, well worth taking a look at those. I'll tweet the links out to those when we finish, and I'll tweet the link out also to the Social Enterprise Exchange Programme. That's worth taking a look at their help. And I mentioned at the start of the show today the new website Good Finance, goodfinance.org.uk. That's been designed by social enterprises to help people access and find out about social investment too. So plenty going on there. Adam, Mike, thanks for coming in today. It's great to have you back in the studio, and hope hopefully tonight's going to be a fantastic event.
Definitely will be.
Yeah. And great to hear of your ongoing success, residences getting set up, the radio appearances, and loads more going on. People can check you out on Twitter and website. Do you want to give out the addresses?
Sure. Website is Right Tracks, spelled RITETRAX. I can't even spell our own name. .co.uk.
And brilliant.
Twitter is Right_tracks.
Yeah.
There you go.
If you write tracks, Google Right Tracks.
Yeah. And I'll link.
Yeah, you'll find
us. We should be the only Right Tracks.
The only Right Tracks.
Yeah. The only tracks.
Excellent. Adam, Mike, thanks for coming
in
today.
Thank you
very much. Thank you for having us.
Nice one.
You've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. We've had Adam and Mike of Right Tracks in the studio. Before that, we heard from Lisa Maltby. We'll be back on air next Friday, but don't go away, because next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. Sam Henley and James and Phil will be in the studio presenting a huge cornucopia of folk music delights for you. Before that, we'll have a quick track of music. We're going to play out with Midnight at the Oasis.
This is Sheffield Live.